FM。18 hours, 30 minutes and 49 seconds East African time. Time for John Sibi Okumu on Wednesday. This being Wednesday, the 6th of July, 2022, hamjambo na karibuni, hello and welcome. Our next general elections are now 34 days away. Sorry, I got the countdown a week out last time. So we continue to explore matters of the moment in their constitutional context, putting ideas over individuals. There are lots of things to be thankful for. For example, I'm thankful that I've never gone hungry in my life. However, hunger is real for many people in our country and indeed in the whole world. I have found out that 70% of Kenyans are food insecure. Kenya is placed in the category with a serious level of hunger in the 2021 Global Hunger Index, and is ranked 87th out of 116 countries. More than 14.5 million Kenyans suffer from chronic food insecurity. Subclause 1C in Article 43 of our Constitution under Economic and Social Rights states that every person has the right to be free from hunger and to have adequate food of acceptable quality. In this edition, we're going to talk about the extremely broad and therefore inexhaustible subject of food security. Our mystery guest is well qualified to lead us along a profitable path of thinking in less than 1 hour. First of all, I would have him listen to these sample answers to the question: do you know of any group of people which is suffering from hunger here in Kenya? Je, unajua ama kufahamu watu wowote wanaoadhirika na janga la njaa hapa nchini?
In fact, let's not talk about of a group of people. 3/4 of Kenyans are suffering from hunger.
People like those who live at Mathare, like Kibera, they are suffering from hunger because they have no vibarua.
Mostly people in slums, especially like Kariobangi, they do vibaruas for us, but nowadays we do for ourselves because the job is a bit down.
Watu wako na njaa zaidi ni watu kama wa Western Pokot, watu kama wa North Eastern, hata Nyanza kuna mahali iko machi wakati kama uchakule na bagiriwa yote. Kwa hivyo hawa watu wanakuanga na njaa. Western kidogo lakini sio sana, wanakaribia na njaa.
The street kids, the beggars, and also hii group ya watu wanaosha watu maguo, imebidi sasa watu wajifanyie because those kind of people charge around 500 or so. So inabidi sasa your high cost of living, mtu wajifanyie hiyo kazi. So to those categories of people who are suffering due to hunger.
Northern part of Kenya, we have a lot of hunger. We also have a lot of hunger in our informal settlements where people live from heart to mouth because of the economic hardship.
More so in places like Kenya West in Nyeri constituency. Those people have been relying so much on rainfall, but at the moment for the past 2 years, they haven't been able to harvest anything. So for sure, they are really suffering.
Ndugu, it seems that wananchi are aware of the problem. What is your response to what you've heard?
That's the reality. There's a lot of hunger prevailing in the country at the moment, contributed to by different factors. Of course, we have the failed rains, and this has affected the ASAL areas, that is arid and semi-arid lands, where people depend on food from their farms. So because there's no food production in those areas, these people are going hungry. Besides that, when you're talking of those in the informal sectors, we have in high level inflation at the moment, and they are not able to afford the basic foods that they need to feed themselves because they don't have the money. Yeah, so that is the reality.
I'd like you to take us back a bit and just tell me, as a lay person, what food security means. Does that mean that I will never lack for food? I've got 10 bags of ugali in my closet which will last me for a month, does that make me food secure?
Let's just go to the definition of food security, which is actually access to food in sufficient, nutritious and safety, and food that is safe in a nutritious and diet to meet dietary preferences and to sustain healthy lives. So if you look at those parameters that have we've talked about, those parameters are non-existent, and they're not being met by the groups that have just shared with us their answers here. So you find that we end up having food security being very prevalent in households, both in the urban and the rural sectors, basically because we are not able to get safe, sufficient food to meet our dietary needs for healthy lives.
Ndugu, can I take you back to our historical past? We're 59 years old.
Yes.
We've been independent for a long time. Tumengangania uhuru. One would like to assume that this would have been a priority. So could you take us back to the past? And you know that wonderful Kenyan phrase, when did the rain start beating us?
Yeah, right from the independence, one of the goals that we had as a nation was to fight hunger, to avail food to everyone at household level. But as it is now, that is not the case. Look at that. During the independence, at the time of independence, we had elaborate extension services all the households were exposed to extension education on agriculture. They were able to taught how to produce foods at their household levels. And you find that during those days, interventions such as kitchen gardens, practices such as kitchen gardens were very common, even in the urban areas. You found a small plot somewhere where people grew vegetables for household consumption, because the extension services were very elaborate and they kept on educating the masses about how to ensure that they have household enough food.
Are you saying in a certain way that our dreaded colonial masters were better educators of how we should conduct ourselves than we ourselves became once independent? We became worse than things were before.
Yeah, I think we lost track somewhere because priorities changed. Previously there was enough allocation for agriculture department to ensure enough extension. We have a sufficient extension services. But that is not the case now, because you find that the agriculture sector is underfunded. We don't have sufficient funds going to manage the agriculture sector. So that has contributed to the inefficient extension system, meaning that people are not getting that education to be able to produce food at household level. Yes.
Allow me to ask another layman's perception, and that is the idea, it is the dream of every Kenyan to own a plot somewhere.
Yes, yes.
And this goes anything from something point of an acre to some people have hundreds of thousands of acres and they've got these huge plots. Mm. Now, if you travel in Europe, I have seen whole regions going from one city to another, given over to the growth of, say, something like potatoes. And you, somewhere in France, you'll have, you know, 90 miles worth of potatoes. Mm. Is this dream of feeding the whole of Kenya real when everybody aspires to own an acre of land and grow their own patch of tomatoes?
I think the farmers have been discouraged. The farmers are willing, but they've been discouraged, especially by the cost of production. The input, the cost of the inputs are so high. For example, we talk of fertilizers, pesticides. The costs are so high. So that means that the yields will be low and even the quality of the produce will not be sufficient.
But my question is slightly more pointed.
Yes.
Should we be thinking small or should we be thinking big?
We should start with the household, the smaller unit. How do we feed ourselves? If our population gets that kind of education, what they can do to feed themselves at household level, starting with simple technology such as the kitchen gardens, which was there before, then people will be able to feed themselves. So we have to start small, and by starting small, people ensure that they are feeding themselves at household level. Then now we go for bigger projects. So I think we should focus at household level. How do we feed ourselves at household level? And most of these technologies are very affordable. You don't require so much input, actually. So it's just a question of providing the extension services, educating the masses on how they can adapt to climate change, because that's also a factor.
I would draw you on an explanation.
Yeah.
We are told that maybe only 25% of our country is arable, yeah. in other words, capable of having yeah. food grown
yeah.
upon it.
Yeah.
So where, whose land mm. is going to be taken over for these large-scale projects?
My friend John, we can reclaim land. You just mentioned Israel here producing food, and it's a desert. In Kenya also, we can reclaim the arid areas, the asal areas, by promoting technologies such as irrigation.
Maybe this is my day to be Mr. Aggressive.
Yeah.
When you mention Israel, yeah. a button goes off in my head
yeah.
about a huge project called, maybe you'd know better,
yeah.
Galana something, that went completely to the dog, so to say. It was abandoned.
Yeah.
And the Israelis, who've yeah. been reclaiming their
yeah.
desert,
yeah.
didn't claim 90% of our own. So to what was that owed?
Governance. Governance is a major problem. Why weren't they held to account? Because the project was well-funded, but if you look at the yields were not very impressive. I mean, and so far, I could say it's a failed project. And why weren't they held to account? So actually, governance and accountability, that is a major factor contributing to inefficient extension services. That is why these services are not working well, because we have misallocation of resources, allocation of few resources to where actually critical areas like agriculture, which should be given proper, even 10% of the budget should be going to agriculture, as per Maputo protocol, you see. But you look at the amounts there, how are they spent? See,
we've got a few more minutes before we take a break.
Yeah.
Please explain to me. Mm. I think a buzzword like governance is all encompassing.
Yes.
Here I am in a studio talking to you. Can I say there is bad governance at Capital FM? Mm. Maybe there is, but at least I'm in front of a microphone. Mm. Where does governance break down, where we've got ombudsmen, we've got people auditing our accounts, that we cannot keep track of an essential service like food security?
Yeah, that is a major subject that we really need to find out how we can rein in malpractices. You know, our project, for example, is well-funded, but then you see what comes out of it is not what we expect. But the people get away free, scot-free. So why are we not utilizing the resources that we have? Because the resources are there, but you are not utilizing them to benefit the Wananchi. So in the process, the end result is that the extension services are not reaching the Wananchi.
Well, you yeah. know, Ndugu, that there's a conversation going on now saying yeah. that if we catch people yeah. with malpractices,
yeah.
we should execute them.
Yeah.
Do you think that 60 years on, this is the solution? Kill people who raid the national coffers?
Well, we have our laws.
It's an ongoing debate.
We have our laws. We have our laws. What it should just enforce the laws, right? They are there.
Yes.
Yeah. People who are engaged in malpractices that compromise the services that are reaching Wananchi should be dealt with according to law. So I think we should just enforce the existing laws, which are clearly spelled out, so that these people who are not managing the resources that we have available well to benefit our communities are subjected to the law, then of course people will learn from that, and going forward we'll be able to have proper use of the resources to benefit the Wananchi. And in this case, for our discussion, extension services will be reaching the farmers, the inputs will be reaching the farmers, and they'll be able to produce optimally to benefit the larger population, so that we are able to deal with the hunger situation.
Sasa nikuuliza useme vile umenieleza kwa Kiswahili kidogo ndio wasikilizaji waelewe.
Yeah.
Yani yavaa kufanya nini?
Wajibikaji. Eh? Utakana wenye wamepewa mamlaka, majukumu kwa serikali ili wahudumie wananchi. Wakizembea kazi, itakana sheria ifuatiliwe vizuri ili wawajibike kwa kinacho jukumu yenye wamepewa wafanye vizuri. So hiyo ndio tunasema watu wajibike kwa kazi, kwa jukumu zenye wamepewa. So hiyo ikiendelea vizuri, tutaweza kupata huduma zenye zitasaidia wakulima, ili waweze kupata kusaidia wakulima kutoa mazao ya kutosha.
Shukran.
Yeah.
A short break. Ndugu, I'm going to ask you to think ahead. Another word that came up in my research was the word access, and I'd like you to comment on that. Mm-hmm. But before we get there, these horrible statistics with which we began, 70% of Kenyans are food insecure, where serious level of hunger, where 87th out of 116 countries on some sort of global index. Now, to come out 87 in your classroom report out of 116, you're not going to take that report to show your parents with pride. You'll get a beating.
Yeah, very, very disappointing ranking. And there are many factors contributing to that. I think we have alluded to some in the previous session that we had. I think there's room for improvement quite a lot, and a lot can be done with the resources that we have. Let us streamline the extension services. Let us subsidize the inputs, especially fertilizers and these pesticides and herbicides, so that Wananchi have access to these resources. So
I'm somewhat skeptical of the fact that these go-to solutions, it's taken a succession of agriculture ministers and CSs, and they haven't worked out what you're telling we should do. Extension services should be extended. Fertilizers should be made cheaper. It seems like these are no-brainers. Why isn't it happening? Maybe it's unfair to ask you that question.
Well,
but it's a field in which you've operated for 25 years.
Yes.
So therefore, isn't there any form of in-house self-policing, writing articles for the... I don't know. It just seems to me...
I think awareness creation extension, I've mentioned it, but there are other agencies. It should be a multi-agency approach, whereby we don't only rely on government, but already we have organizations, development organizations, also contributing towards creating awareness on different ways in which you can enhance household food security. And most of these household food security approaches are very, very affordable and applicable, be it in urban areas or rural areas. We just need a small piece of land, a small space, and there you go. You can do your different types of technologies. And you don't need a lot of water to sustain some of these kitchen gardens. And then we are talking of the small livestock, things like chicken. You don't need so much space. And in the process, you know, when you have this food accessible, it goes within reach and you're not spending money. You know, what normally creates inaccessibility is lack of money, because you don't have money to buy the sufficient volumes of food that you need from the market. So, but when you grow them in the kitchen garden, for example, what happens is that you've not spent any money. And some actually, if you're more well-planned, you can even do more and even sell to your neighbors. And of course, the money that you get from these kitchen gardens, you're able to do what? You are able to buy other household needs that you require. So we should cascade this information to the lowest levels to make the households believe, both in the urban and in the informal sectors, that they are able to produce these foods on their own. And right now we have varied technologies for kitchen gardens. We have the multi-story gardens that can even be done in urban areas. You have the multi-story, the container gardens, recycling used containers, tires, you know, to produce, to grow vegetables. So even if it's a story building, I was in Chuda, Mombasa, and I saw a high-rise, those high-rise buildings in Chuda. They have flat roofs. And the whole of it, the top floor, was kitchen gardens, containers full of vegetables. And what that means is that the lady... who is practicing this, actually does not spend any money on the vegetables. And apart from that, she's also selling to the neighbors. So it is very empowering. So let us cascade this information to the lowest levels, even using diagrams, to make people understand that they really don't have to wait for the government. They can take charge of this approach on their own and start producing food at household level. Waende kupanda mboga, kivyao, ikiwa hata kama space ni kidogo namna gani, tumia ka container, even sack gardens, recycle the bags, They have different technologies to recycle all the materials we have to produce food at household level.
With respect, are you trying to suggest that there are two Kenyas, maybe three Kenyans, because there's a huge acreage of the Kenyan surface area, which is next to desert? What's happening now in the north? There are no high-rise buildings for people to start growing tomatoes in pots in. So are we going to neglect that particular...
No, we'll not neglect those areas. You see, varied technologies. For example, irrigation. You can apply where you have rivers, you can utilize irrigation system to produce food. And you see, with irrigation, it's here...
We're not talking about the same Kenya. We have these flash floods in whatever region and they take away whole bridges and everything else.
Yes.
Again, I'm asking about our thinkers, the thinkers towards the African Renaissance.
Yeah.
What have they done to solve these peculiar problems without necessarily waiting for the Israelis or the Chinese or the Japanese to come and bail us out?
Let us educate.
The idea of self-sufficiency.
Let us educate the masses that this rain that we have every year, when this is flooding, why don't we build dams? Right? And some of these dams, you don't need so much money. You can do the small farm reservoirs, right? That can serve even a household. Harvest the rainwater and use it for irrigation. So as long as we are able to utilize the resources that we have, every year it rains, where does the water go to? You see, let us harvest the rainwater, use it for irrigation. And there are many efficient irrigation systems. So the assaults, even to go to those assault areas, it rains in a year and it rains heavily. Go to places like Kwale. The rainfall may not be well distributed, but there's that particular period that you'll have intense rains. But unfortunately, nobody harvests the rainwater. And there lies the solution. If you are able to harvest this rainwater, what will happen? You will be able to irrigate throughout the year. That is what we are not doing.
I'd like to ask you whether that the obligations of the state, every time we have a program like this, we refer to Article 21, which gives the citizen, Mwananchi, enormous powers to take the government to task. Is there a building into which I could walk now and see what is the moral equivalent of a Chinese 50-year plan, saying things might not be perfect now, but come the year 2030, we shall be food sufficient?
We have all those documents.
Right.
But the problem in Kenya is implementation.
Right.
Right now we have the Big Four, which food security actually features prominently. We had the Vision 2030. We have all these protocols and frameworks. But the problem is implementation. Is there the goodwill? How are you going to cultivate this goodwill to be able to have these frameworks, these good documents implemented? So, but my philosophy has always been for provide information to the Mwananchi that they can take charge of their own destiny. You can take charge of your own destiny by utilizing the resources around you. That is where the gap is. But then you have the civil society organizations, where most of the development organizations that we have. I think that's a role we need to play in terms of training the citizens, that they have the resources that they can harness to better their lives, instead of waiting for the big man, yes, the government, to come and sort you out.
Ndugu, can I one more image before we take another break?
Yes.
I just want you to comment again. I'm going to be personal and reveal the fact that we have this idea of ancestral land,
yes,
which has come in from generation to the generations. The Okumus lived there. This is their land. But this is not to cast aspersions on my people. We're very attached to that land. There's certain people living on a small little partition of it, but and we don't want neighbors to encroach. But I can tell you for a fact that so many of acres of that land have remained uncultivated for the last generation. So I'm trying to suggest, if the state is the chief legislator of our human conduct, why hasn't the government come to talk to my aunties and shoshos and tell them how to best utilize their land. Nobody's come to visit us to say.
I think since the approaches we have been using have failed, and we have an obligation to ensure that food security is achieved, we have to offer incentives. I think incentives would encourage the people to utilize their lands. For example, assuring the producers, the farmers of market for their produce, so that whatever they produce, they know that they'll have enough to feed themselves. And even if they're to sell, there's a system to ensure that this the produce that they have is bought at good prices. But that, because that's what has actually encouraged many farmers. You know, they produce, but then at the end of the day, you find that the cost of production is higher than what they get. So if we can offer incentives in terms of market and better prices, then I think it will go a long way in encouraging people to get engaged in farming. Because that is, I think, that's what has encouraged most of the farmers that we have in the rural areas.
Another break, please.
Yeah.
Ndugu, the way forward, is that enough of a headline for you to speak first before I comment? Yeah. What is the way forward?
The way forward is the realization that we have climate change affecting agriculture production, and we have to adapt to climate change. And we have to utilize the resources we have. Let us provide information to the communities. Let us provide information to the communities that they can harness these resources to be able to sustainably produce food to feed their households. So besides that, I'd mentioned the aspect of commercializing agriculture production. That would also be a game changer. If we assure the communities that whatever they produce can be able to fetch market at whatever scale they have, they'll be encouraged to get engaged in food production. So that, you know, the good thing is that as they produce, they'll be having enough to feed themselves and enough to sell. I think that is the way to go. So we have to use technologies that are, available to them to harness the resources that they have, and also encourage commercialization. So that even if they sell, they're able to buy the household needs that they don't have, they're not able to produce. And again, at the same time, feed themselves.
May I put something to you as an expert? Again, just from reading the papers and listening to people talk, sir, this idea that we have genetically modified foods. Mm. Again, my people, as in the people from where I come from, they would say, oh, Mwalimu, things are getting really out of hand here. Mm. We used to have our seeds. Mm. Now we go and have our seeds and we plant our bananas. But those seeds somehow run out. Mm. They have a sell-by date. Mm. And then we have to go and buy some more. Mm. So again, to me, it seems to me that it's unfair, because if you can't adopt the technologies on offer,
yes,
then you're poorer than you were when you started with. You've lost indigenous biodiversity, which again is enshrined in our constitution, our cultural values, mila zetu, chakula chetu. Mm. So I'm really thinking in this electoral season, with all these manifestos, with all these huge gatherings of people, it seems to me that the matter of food security ought to be a big deal. Mm. What should our aspirant politicians be promising us in a manner that we can understand and implement? What should they be saying? Shouldn't everybody's manifesto by definition be the same on this particular issue? Because we're all trying to make the country food secure.
Yeah.
So there should be some kind of coming together. But I don't see people coming together. I see people rubbishing each other and saying your solution is pathetic and mine is wonderful.
Actually, food security should be prominent in the manifestos, especially in terms of empowering the communities to feed themselves. So what our leaders should be doing at this time is to engage with the Wananchi, find out how best they can work with them going forward in future to be able to feed themselves without depending on government. So those right, are the
again,
things.
Again, yeah. again, I'm going to cut you short because we don't have the time, but this is uppermost in my mind.
Yeah.
There are two things. Yeah. The idea that we have things which are perceived to be our food,
yes.
like maize meal,
yes.
ugali, and then somebody tells you that that ugali is so refined, so that it has no nutritional value whatsoever. And somebody would say to you that children who have food without nutrition, they are either, they have stunted growth, they have poor mental capacity, they can't. So we are in effect condemning the next generation. So 60 years on, why are we still saying the staple food of Kenyans is ugali? And 60 years on, why do we have huge acreage of our land put aside for a commodity like tea, which ends up being called British tea or Japanese tea, anything but Kenyan tea. And it seems to me that you don't eat tea, so it's very fertile land. Why not grow something else? Or is that too revolutionary? Is that going to bring about the
I think that
third revolution?
No, I'm in agreement with you. Actually, we should be promoting the indigenous foods that we had before. Actually, right now, there's
and reevaluating the foods that we've assumed to be ours, so to speak. Well, maybe we shouldn't be having jogo. Sorry.
I agree with you. Actually, right now, the idea is to promote. We have the indigenous foods. They're called the orphan crops. For example, the millets, the sorghums. Those are that are adaptable to our soils and climates. You see, those don't require so much rain. Cassava, sweet potatoes. Those, you see, in the olden days, these were produced liberally by our communities. But now you find everybody went to maize. Maize requires a lot of precipitation and fertilizer. So if you focus on this, and good enough, right now, you go to these restaurants, you find that the indigenous vegetables, the kundes, the managus, the mchichas, the managus, those are fetch a higher price than the skumawikis. So let us go sustain that promotion of the indigenous crops, vegetables, and the root crops as a complementary to maize. I know we are so much used to maize, but you know the beauty with these indigenous crops. For example, millet, sorghum. There are so many products. You can do porridge. You can even blend. You know, you can even make other products like cakes and all these kind of. Produce that are required. So,
but I'm engaging you on the level of what we our expectations of government.
Yes,
there'll be somebody coming into this studio. The Constitution promises a social security program.
Yes, yes.
I am saying there are certain things that the man in the street readily understands. The man in the street can readily understand that we're going to buy a fighter jet worth 30 billion shillings and we're going to train a few pilots to zoom around at breakneck speed. But it seems to me that there's always this litany of African solutions for African problems. Surely the idea of feeding our people, school feeding programs, is going to say, let's feed our children at the expense of not having another fighter jet. Are we incapable of such lateral thinking? If you tell me that we are, then, you know, there is a music station. We can get some rock going here and listen to some rock for the next 15 minutes.
Yeah. Because what I would even say is that, you know, we're already on the right track in terms of promoting these indigenous foods and whatever would go towards improving food security. But I think we should also try and implement what we have planned. For example, how much do we allocate to the budgets, the agriculture budget? So whoever is selling his manifesto here should clearly spell out how much they are going to allocate for agriculture.
Right. Now I'm listening keenly.
Yes.
You're saying?
Yes.
Whoever should. Yeah, I'm going to be writing everything down.
How much they should allocate for agriculture?
You said currently we're standing at 3% when it ought to be 10.
10%.
Right.
Right. So you see, it's underfunded. So, but even if it is underfunded, how are we utilizing the resources? What are they going to do to ensure that the resources are well utilized? The services reach the people, the inputs reach the people, right?
Right.
Yeah. So I think.
And dare I say, in a devolved system of government with 47 counties, is there an inherent inequality afoot where some places of Kenya are going to be able to be food secure and the rest will languish in despair? Or, having produced your 50,000 kilos of maize in Kwale, are you going to be obliged to ship it to Wajir by legislation?
Through legislation, you're saying. Yeah.
You're creating an internal market. You're saying if you grow enough food
yes.
and you've eaten some yourself,
yeah.
you can export it to your fellow brother in Uganda, South Sudan. It doesn't matter, but yeah. you're still going to get money for it.
That should be encouraged. I had, I thought of having every county specializing on a particular produce. That should be encouraged. Look at what you are able to produce in your respective locality.
Right.
And informed by the market.
Yes. Right.
Does it have market? So that we have inter-county trading of agriculture produce. So that is our way to go. What I would say that all the counties, all the localities in Kenya, even the ASAL areas, you have a value chain that can be identified and promoted. You talk of those ASAL areas, they can focus
You're
on...
You're using a term there that is very jargony, ASAL.
ASAL, that is arid and semi-arid lands. Okay. The northern part
arid
of Kenya.
And semi-arid
lands.
Okay.
Those ones with low precipitation, poor soils. Those ones can focus on what? On livestock.
Right.
The small livestock like the goats, right?
Currently, their livestock, if you read your papers, are dying by the hundreds per day.
Yeah,
whole of northern Kenya is full of carcasses of
dead camels. There are solutions to that, John, you see. Yeah. Why don't we grow pasture? Why don't we bulk pasture? So that during the dry season, we are able to feed the animals. You know, we are relying
on... I'm listening. Every time you give me a solution, I start smiling from cheek to cheek.
Yeah, we are relying on rains. But you see, during the rains, we are not making optimal use of the rains that we have. That's what I'm saying. We are not educating our people to make good use of the resources that they have.
Right.
So when it rains, for example, harvest the pasture, bulk it, do the hay, so that during the dry period, you are feeding the livestock, you see. So there are solutions for, every county. Those ones in the dry areas, the ASAL areas, they can focus on livestock, the goats, and they trade them with the areas that, are producing other produce. So I think that's what we should focus on. And it's already coming up in terms of each county identifying their preferable value chain. And I think that's the way to go.
Could you comment on this idea of having, it was a balanced diet, not just the idea that you put food into your belly, but this food is good for you.
Yes.
Again, we don't have to do our 101 proteins, carbohydrate, fat, avoid this, avoid that, meats. There's a whole debate around what to eat. Mm. But I'm focusing on children so that, in the United States, for example, in the Obama administration, we used to read that I think it was Michelle Obama who was like the great champion of eating properly. Mm. And she went and sort of skipped and did 100 press-ups with children and said to them, eat this. They all did that. Mm. Is that something that can only happen in the first world? Remember the comment that was made by people saying that in the urban areas, people are living from hand to mouth. Mm. People are going to sort of garbage dumps in Dandora and feeding themselves with food which is inherently bad for them. Think elections, think of all these things. Everything will change August the 10th.
Yeah.
August the 10th is meant to be the age of paradise.
Yeah.
Will it be in terms of food security?
Is a sorry situation, but it can be addressed. It can be solved. What we need is to provide information, train the communities on how they can best utilize the resources that they have. We're talking of the balanced diet. What if it's in the rural areas? Whatever you're growing, you can provide for all that with the information you have. Especially even if you're targeting the children who are under five, the malnourished children, we clearly know that you need a space for growing legumes to provide the proteins. We've already talked of alternatives, other grains that can complement maize, but are more adaptable to dry conditions. We have the millet, the sorghums, the cassava, the sweet potatoes to complement the maize, and then of course. vegetables. I've talked of the indigenous vegetables. So we have these, and traditionally, actually, we didn't starve because we were growing these morenda and all these indigenous vegetables. And some of them just grow wildly, you see. So we have the solutions. What we don't have is the information because of a failed extension system. So once this is sorted out, the Wananchi will be able to know that, you see, with these resources that we have, this space of land that I have, I'm able to produce the food and not wait for government to come and solve my problem.
Na nikiomba ongee tena kidogo kwa Kiswahili kusema vile umesema hapo kwa Kizungu.
Eh, na vile nasema, tuko na rasilimali. Penye popote tulipo. Tukiwa na zile mashamba zetu za jikoni za zamani, zile mashamba kidogo kidogo zenye tukua takuwa nayo. Upande mboga za kienyeji kama mchicha, mrenda, hizo hazihitaji mvua mingi. Terere, ukikuja kwa viazi na muhogo. Muhogo hahitaji mvua mingi. Lakini utakula. Lakini ukitegemea mahindi, mvua ikinyesha, ikikosa kunyesha, hautavuna. Lakini muhogo utavuna. Tuko na vitu kama kunde, dengu, hizo zote zinapeana protein, za kujenga mwili. Ukikuja kwa mji, nimesisitiza tuwe na hizi ma kitchen garden, kuwa na makontena. Tayari tunaona matairi yametumika, makontena, mamkebe, magunia zimetumika, hizo tumia kupanda mboga. Ukitumia hizo, chenye itakuwa utaweza kujilisha, na ukijilisha hautatumia pesa kununua mboga. Hiyo pesa yenye umesave utanunua nayo mahitaji yako ingine. Na ukiwa umepanda mengi, utafanya nini? Utauzia wenzako na pia tena utafanya nini? Utapata pesa.
Okay. Yeah. Achilia hapo dakika mbili tu.
Sasa.
A quick break.
Thank you. Capital
FM. Ndugu, we've got 10 minutes to go, but we did say that this was inexhaustible. I came away with the feeling initially that we've had 59 years plus and things are getting worse. I wonder, before you reveal who you are, you could give us reason for hope. I would say things are going continually downhill. Could you disabuse me of that sentiment?
Yeah,
and further, that the gap between the haves and the have-nots is actually being amplified in our country with every passing year.
Yeah, there's a lot of hope. We need to empower our communities, empowering our communities to take charge of their own destiny in terms of taking care of their household food security. Every household is capable of feeding themselves, given the information. What I see obtaining in Kenya is a lack of information reaching to the communities. If they are made aware that they have the resources with them at within reach to avail food for them in sufficient quantities, and of course the right the kinds of foods to grow, I think this will be sorted out, and it's doable. So let us strengthen the extension system. Let us pass this information to the communities in a timely manner. Let us reach to the lowest level, and promote different types of technologies, and more so provide incentives. Because whatever a farmer produces, if they are able to get money out of it, they'll be encouraged to continue producing. That is where there's been a gap. Somebody produces, and when they produce, they are not able to get sufficient quantities. And we should also embrace storage of food. Right? Previously, in the olden days, we had granaries. Why aren't we storing food at household level? So there are various technologies that can be promoted. What we need is extension. Make people aware of all these technologies. Let them know that, they are able to address the food security at household level on their own. Given the information, the communities will not fail. And let us encourage them by showing them the market. Where they're going to sell their produce.
I'd like you to comment on the fact that you've said to me in earlier conversation that you've worked for NGOs.
Yes.
NGO seems to me to suggest foreign guidance.
Well, NGOs get foreign funding, but most of the solutions are homegrown, right?
most of the solutions that we are applying in Kenya here to address the food security situation are homegrown. So it's the funding that is coming from external sources. But the ideas, like now what you're promoting, like the indigenous promotion of orphan crops and indigenous foods that are adaptable to our climates and soils, those are local solutions, the indigenous technical knowledge. Some of them, actually, some of this information comes from the communities themselves because they are practiced from the olden age. So we should encourage that. They should encourage the communities to do what they're already doing in a better way with the incentives. And then, of course, we have the aggregation. You know, once you have every household producing, when they bulk this produce, they're able to access markets. Right. So that's what we should encourage. Every household should produce in whatever levels. Even if it is small quantities, they'll aggregate as a village. And when they aggregate as a village, they can have a market. People buying, and of course they get encouraged.
Would you like to comment, Ndugu, on where we stand in the international community, starting off with the rest of the African continent? Kenya, with regard to the other 54 countries in Africa, where do we we last in that particular
not
grouping?
not very impressive, because last time I heard, we are importing eggs and tomatoes from Tanzania. And it's not because we are not able to produce the eggs. It's not because we are not able to produce tomatoes. It is because we are not getting enough support in terms of marketing the produce and subsidies. You know, some government subsidize the cost of inputs so that the farmer can see the difference, right? The idea is to encourage people to produce. And as we produce, what happens is that the farmers see the sense in getting engaged in farming, right? And once you have farmers, communities engaging in farming, we'll have solved this problem of food security once and for all. Yeah.
Unaitwaje? Wewe ni nani?
Mimi naitwa Julius Wairoma. I'm a development practitioner. I work for Compassion Kenya, International Kenya, as a food security and livelihoods specialist.
So, how did you end up being what you are?
Well, I'm an agriculturalist by profession, but I've added other knowledge. For example, I have a master's in project planning and management, and I'm now doing a doctorate in development studies. I've broadened my knowledge. So in order to...
governed your choice as a student to... why did you want to become what you have as opposed to a brain surgeon?
The passion to empower communities. That has always been my passion, to see a community that is empowered. That informed my choice, my pathway, career pathway. And I really feel fulfilled. Most of when I visit my previous projects and I see people who are prospering, people who have crossed the poverty line and are self-dependent, I really feel fulfilled.
We must encourage the young listening to people like yourself.
Yeah.
Do the idea of the service tradition, the idea of wanting to give back, what do you think might be done to encourage our young people to be farmers? Because currently they're on their computers, they're not talking to anybody, they're in another planet, sort of texting this and texting that, and they're not thinking deep thoughts about what are we going to do to make ourselves food secure. They feel that if they step into the supermarket, the food will be there, but they have no great interest in growing it.
Yeah, what I would like to tell our youths is that a career or in agriculture or getting involved in farming is very rewarding, especially when you choose the right type of enterprise or value chain that you want to get involved in, be it beekeeping, you have poultry rearing, the production of these indigenous vegetables. Right now, we are importing most of these foodstuff. What if you are growing them in Kenya here? You have all this opportunity to better yourself. And in terms of career in the development sector, it is very rewarding because, you know, when you're empowering the communities, you see a change in their lives. You see them becoming very independent. You see them prospering.
Is there inherently money in it? I mean, okay, we rewarded the community.
Yeah.
Is your son or daughter growing to?
It's a very exciting career. I would say it's a fun,
a rich career.
It's a fun career. It's a career that you're not regimented. You are so flexible. You can plan for what you want to do depending on what actually is needs driven. You look at the community and whatever the community needs, and the community prioritize for you. They tell you this is what we need, and you work with them. And it is very, very rewarding and very, very exciting. You travel a lot.
Right. So this idea of vocational training,
yes.
Is there going to be a gradation? You know, in the bad old days, you had the nyapara, you had the supervisor. Yeah. Are some of our young people going to get degrees and masters and PhDs as you are? What is there to aspire to that is the lowest common denominator, but still ensures that you take your children to school? Etc.
Yeah, what I would say is that if you pursue that career path of development, is that you become your own supervisor, you know, because you are the one who has ideas, you know, you look at what the community needs, and you work with them, and they provoke your thinking, you know, they provoke your thinking because you plan with them, you implement with them, you follow up with them. And it's very exciting. If you want to travel, you travel so much. You're going to visit these projects. It's very exciting. You don't have to sit in the office the whole day. And you learn a lot from them. So some of these ideas that you're implementing with them, you're able also to do them on your own and grow yourself. I've just talked of identifying the profitable value chains, which people have not ventured into. Those are areas in which one can venture into and be able to supply. Like, for example, indigenous vegetables, it's bogas and kenyeji, people are not producing them. Beekeeping and what have you. So, yeah, it's fun. It's fun. It's a fun career because you're interacting with people. Yes, thank you.
We have to stop there. Thank you very much. Do continue to give us feedback, dear listeners, hopefully positive and reassuring, on the Twitter handle @CapitalFMKenya. Or drop us a text or WhatsApp message on 0701-984-984. I've been talking to Julius Wairoma, and you've been listening to John Sibiokumu on Wednesday. Thank you. Until next time.